intent to finish up this page that we started a week or 2 weeks ago.
On the second side, source number 5 on tab. But just as a forerunner, so last week we referred to the source on the bottom of the page, which in essence would have been source number 10. I realized what had happened. I had prepared this source page a long time ago, but then I decided to add some sources, the Sfat Emet and the Ralbag, and I inadvertently did not put in numbering for 9 and 10. That's really what happened. So the numbering ends at 8, and then there's two sources, the Sfat Emet and the Ralbag. Last week we did the Ralbag, and the Ralbag basically turns topsy-turvy the entire belief that 613 mitzvot are from Sinai, something that we all grew up on this notion, and all of a sudden we find out that that's not necessarily the case. It just so happens he's not the only one in town who has that opinion. So not on the source page, I'm just going to read a little bit from the Ibn Ezra, who's very, very accepted, studied much more so than the Ralbag. Last week I explained that to study Ralbag, you basically have to be a scientist because half of his perushim integrate scientific knowledge and experience. And if you, I mentioned my daughter wrote a doctoral dissertation on this, and you have to really be into science and into parshanut and see the interface between the two. But Ibn Ezra is much more of a popular parshan, and I'll just quote from one of his writings. He writes, Ra'iti kama chachamim sofrim. There are many of the sages, many of the chachamim, who count 613 mitzvot, but different ways. Some of them in the pasuk lo tevashel gidi b'chalev imo, which is the proof text for the prohibition of cooking meat and milk. So you know that pasuk appears 3 times in Torah. And the Gemara tells us, one is for the prohibition of cooking meat and milk together, one is for the prohibition of eating the cooked product of meat and milk together, and the third is deriving pleasure. It could be sensual pleasure, it could be financial pleasure, whatever the pleasure may be, and from the cooked product of meat and milk. Fine, so that's a halacha. That's mentioned in Masechet Chulin. Rashi brings it in the Chumash. No big earth-shattering things. The only problem is that when we view those who counted mitzvot, so the Ibn Ezra says, some count Bishul Gidi, that means the Lot of Hashel Gidi B'Chalev Mo, as once, and some count it 3 times. Now, how does that pan out? You have one Pasuk, is it one Aveira, Basar B'Chalav, but now it comes in details. There's A, B, and C. So is A a separate category? Is B a separate category? Is C a separate category? And it seems to be a difference of opinion of those who count the mitzvot. Some count it as one, and some count it as 3. Guess what? The Rambam counts it as 2. And the Ibn Ezra doesn't know that. He doesn't know that. He never met the Rambam. And the Rambam believes that Bishul, the cooking of Basav Chalav, is an independent Avera, but the eating and the deriving benefit are all one category, because deriving benefit, eating, he says, is a category of benefit. But there are other benefits. Like I said, financial benefits. You can own stock in a company that deals with cheeseburgers, and you're earning dividends off the back of a cheeseburger. That's prohibited, provided that the cheeseburger came from meat that was kosher and cheese that was kosher. That's why stock in McDonald's is permissible, because it's just treif, but it's not bus of a cholof. How's that? I didn't write the rules. I just get paid to repeat them. That's all. That a cheeseburger, there's no question. The only place where a cheeseburger is glot treif is unfortunately here in Eretz Yisrael. The only place. Because here, this meat source is kosher, and the cheese is from Tnuva. So if they make a cheeseburger, they're actually making a unadulterated bus of a cholov, and it's a terrible thing. The Torah says that bus of a cholov is, in order to have a prohibition of bus of a cholov, you have to have kosher meat and kosher milk or milk product. Because if the meat is not kosher, so why do I have to have another prohibition? It's the strafe already. Okay, so therefore the chiddush, the novelty is that if you take kosher meat and kosher milk and cook it together, then it's prohibited.
But we're not allowed to eat them together. It's still in the Torah.
No, you're not allowed to eat a cooked product together. Not eating meat and milk at one meal is a rabbinic add-on. Min HaTorah, you can have a salami sandwich and an ice cream and not a pot of ice cream, but you know, a good you know, Carvel, you know, Ben and Jerry's, right? You couldn't feel bidoraita, I'm saying. Chachamim slapped on an isur of eating it together at the same meal. So we separate it with meals. How much time is between meals? Right? That's a shear and a half, right? How much time? I once, when I taught chulin in a high school once, and the eighth perek, and I was very happy to do that, I remember there's a thing called a blackboard, remember? There's a, maybe some people in this room still remember. Not everybody. Chalk. Right, chalk. I mean, today nobody uses chalk anyway. Even if there's a board, they use markers. Right? Use markers, use overhead projectors, use barcodes, you know. The kids don't know what chalk is, you know. So I put on the board, I made a chart of how many different opinions there are in waiting between meat and milk in the halakha. There are different opinions. So how many lines did I have to draw on the board? 9 different lines. There are 9 different opinions as to... that's a shear. Don't get me started now. The maximum is not 6 hours. What's the maximum? But don't tell it to anybody who lives in Har Nof, because they're going to start doing it. But it's 24 hours. There's a view in the Gemara that said that if you eat besari at 2 in the afternoon, you can't have chalavi till tomorrow 2 in the afternoon. It is rejected lahalacha. We never made it to the Rambam Shulchan Aruch. But it's a view. Now, all I'm saying is that there are views, there are shitot out there. What's the minimal view?
Wash your mouth.
No, 1 hour is a chumrah. Just wash the mouth out and birkat hamazon. You have to separate it with a formal birkat hamazon or bracha achrona, and you go right into the chalavi. Who says that? None other than Rabbeinu Tam, Rashi's grandson. And as my grandfather Olshom used to say, when erot oich you can't learn it. He also knew how to learn a little bit. So there are different, and there's a history to this. There's a history to Bosa B'cholov. You know, why the 3 and why the 6 and why the 5.31? Well, yeah.
Anyone who keeps that rinsing your mouth out in the community?
No, the minimum that I know is 1 hour, and that's the Dutch Jewish community. Right. I had a young lady I taught in the Dresher Moriah many years ago. She said, I don't care who I marry as long as he's Dutch. Yeah. So, okay. The Sfardim have an opinion. Their opinion generally developed around the 6 hours. Except in Tunisia, where they had for chicken, turkey, whatever, fowl, 4 hours. It was an interesting shita that they had. Even though the Rambam says that same 6 hours for meat and for fowl, which is the Rabbanan anyway, going to most opinions. But anyway, the Rambam counts Bosa B'cholov as he has two slots in the 613. And one is for the prohibition of cooking meat and milk together, and one is for eating meat and milk together, which includes general benefit of meat and milk together. And this the Ibn Ezra is not aware of, but he's aware of the 1 and the 3. And he sees, V'chachameinu dorshim rebrabot hekacha. There are many, many examples of this, he says, and which means he's keenly aware of the fact that the listing of Taryag Mitzvot, there's no traditional authoritative list. It fluctuates from one to the other, from the Halachot Gedolot to Rav Sadia Gaon, and even after the Rambam, the Ramban argues, and other Svarim, the Sefer Mitzvot Gadol, and Sefer Mitzvot Katan, it's a whole literature out there of Minyan HaMitzvot, counting up the Mitzvot. And therefore he says that, Rabbi Ezra is not putting a lot of weight on the number. Now what's interesting is that the Rambam believed that if there's a bona fide machloket about a particular halakha, that in itself is a proof that the information was not brought down traditionally from Sinai. That if it was from Sinai, it could not, by definition, couldn't have a machloket. And there are so many areas of halakha where there is a machloket, which means that that detail was left unresolved at the time of Sinai for Am Yisrael to explore and use the Beit Din HaGadol to be decisive and so on. Now the Rambam was aware that there were others who disagreed with him in the counting of the mitzvot. So why does he say that that's from Sinai? Because he believed the others were wrong. That's why. They were wrong, dead wrong. That's why. There's a difference between a machloket where, okay, you have an opinion, you have a basis, you have a logic, and so I have a logic too, and I have a basis, and we came up with different conclusions. So that's what's called Elu Ve'elu Devrei Elokim Chayim. This is Torah, that's Torah. But in the case of the counting of the mitzvot, the Rambam felt that they were wrong. That's all. And wrong. And therefore, it doesn't count. It's not a legitimate opinion, he felt. And how can you count the rabbinic add-ons as part of the 613? And he's arguing against the halachot gedolot and Rav Sadjagon, who counted the Hanukkah candles and Purim Megillah reading. This can't be part of 613. So Rabbi Ezra, you know, puts in a shaky word here, where he believes that he says al derech mechkar ha'emet, if you're really sincerely researching this with integrity, ain keitz lemispar mitzvot. There's really, it's unending how many mitzvot there are. And he says, and some people prefer just counting the klalim and ikarim, the most important central mitzvot. They are the ones. He says, if you do that, then you come up with about a tenth of 613. You'll come up with about 60 mitzvot. So where's the beginning, where's the end? What is in, what is out? Ibn Ezra doesn't leave us a clue of what his policy is. The Rambam didn't hide from the policy question. That's why he wrote the 14 introductory paragraphs to tell us what the policy is. And on these 14, the Ramban has something to say on the policy issue. So it's not that when the Ramban argues on the Rambam, it's not that he's saying, we have a different tradition, whatever. He says, no, I think you, Rav Moshe ben Maimon, as great as you are, we're arguing on the policy question. And therefore, Ramban has different ground rules as to how you count the mitzvot, and that's why he comes up with somewhat of a different listing. There's also, beyond the Ralbag, there's also a posek whose name is Rabbi Shimon ben Tzemach, Rabbi Shimon ben Tzemach Duran, like almost a family name, Duran. Rabbi Shimon ben Tzemach is Rabbi Shimon ben Tzemach Rashbatz, and sometimes known as Tashbatz, which means the tshuvot, the response of Shimon ben Tzemach. He's a, if I'm not mistaken, a 14th century, and he's in North Africa, in Egypt. And he wrote, Davar muskam hu b'chol Yisrael, sheminyan mitzvot in taryag. It's just accepted. This is 20 years after the Rambam. Everybody knows this, 613. Ask any kid in kindergarten. V'lo nimtza b'zeh machloket klal. Not an issue. That's very interesting. What do you mean not an issue? I just listed half a dozen people who argue with the Rambam on this. But he says, everybody agreed. V'shema mashu uskam sheminyana mitzvot him taryag, which is 365 don'ts and 248 do's, hu lefi dat rav simla'i. It could be that number is because the Tana in the Breita found in Masechet Makot, the Torah Tzivelano Moshe, Torah is the numerical equivalent of 611, and two of the Aseret HaDerot we heard directly from Kadosh Baruch Hu, so 611 Tzivelano Moshe, and add another two, you get your 613. He says, this is very nice, he says, Ukfi Masha Pirush Hu HaMitzvot, Rav Sumloy says, these are the Mitzvot Torah, Anachnu Lo Nismoch Alav Beferusho Binyan Psak Halacha, which means, if we have a halachic understanding, and we think the halakha is correct, and all of a sudden we take a look at the listing of Taryag Mitzvot and notice that it's either there or not there on the list, don't lose any sleep over this. Don't think it's a major problem. Aval nismocha sugyata Talmud. We're just going to rely on the way we understand halakha from the Gemara. Umashi iskiru b'chol makom zeh minyan, hu lefi shelo matzinu chacham acher man'am. So, how did 613 become the big number? Because one chacham in the Gemara mentions it as a sum total number. And nobody else bothered to count. So it almost became an accepted number. Therefore, tafasnu minyano, we grabbed this particular number. Ve'af im yechasru o yeadef haminyan hu holech svivo, and even if it turns out that is a one or two less, a one or two more, you know, be'erech, approximately 613. V'hu kom rom harbein mekomot, hevi purta, upurta lo dak. Well, that's a little less, and you know, don't make a big deal about it. The Gemara sometimes uses these types of expressions. It's just not exact number, which is really a phenomenal thing when studying the whole concept of Taryag Mitzvot. So here, if we go back to our source page on number 5, second side top source, Sefer Mitzvot LaRamba, Mitzvot Asei Hei. So the fifth mitzvah, so that means it's pretty much high in the list. It's right after Anochi Hashem Elokecha, the awareness of the existence of God, and the mitzvah of Avat Hashem and Morah, having awe for God. So here you have the mitzvah of Avodat Hashem, service of God. And the Rambam is aware of the fact that the term Avodat Hashem, service of God, is a term that sounds very general, almost like Kiddushim to you, you shall be holy. And the Rambam does not count the Pasuk Kiddushim to you as one of 613, because as part of his policy, it has to have a specific, concrete action. Now the action could either be, in the words of Parshat Nitzavim, Beficha bilvavcha la'asoto. It could be verbal, an action that's spoken, articulated. It can be a thought process. You don't have to lift a finger, but you have to think about something. Or it could be a physical action. You have to do something. Beficha bilvavcha la'asoto. If it doesn't fall into a specific designated and calculated action or thought process or saying of something, if you don't have that, then it can't be a mitzvah. It could be a nice idea. It could be a type of a biblical slogan, an environment, an atmosphere. It's all very good, but it's not one of the 613. There are those that claim that the reason that the Rambam does not include into the scheme of 613 the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael, and he does not, is because he believes that the mitzvah of Yeshuva Aretz doesn't come along with a defined, specific act. It's of a general nature. The fact is that the mitzvah of Yeshuva Aretz launches many, many, many mitzvot. Because if you don't have Yeshuva Aretz, then you don't have dozens and dozens of mitzvot don't come into play. And those other mitzvot have defined concrete activities associated with them. But the mitzvah of just being here, you know, you walked off the plane and Zell, you're here. I mean, well, what did you do to fulfill the mitzvah of Yeshuva Aretz? Is that what it means, just being here? So who argues with that? The Ramban. The Ramban says, excuse me, that's an act. You picked yourself up from, you know, wherever you lived in Chutz Laretz, you packed your bags, and you came here, and you're here. And we can actually pin our finger on certain halakhic statements that clearly reflect mitzvah act, like walking in the land. Kol ha'olech d'al ha'ramot b'eretz Yisrael muftach lo shuben olam haba. Just walking, you know, which d'al ha'ramot is about 6 to 8 feet, if we translate it in the idiom of American measurements. Not from here to the door is already d'al ha'ramot. No big deal. And then, of course, the question is, do you get another mitzvah every dalar amot, or is it dalar amot va'elach and further? You know, because dalar amot is a concept. Four amot means it's your radius of private territory, and the idea is move out of your territory and explore the land. And that says in the Chumash, we just read it in Lech Lecha, kum hitalech ba'aretz la'orka ulerachpa ki lecha etnena. Part of the ownership, the power of ownership of Eretz Yisrael is to demonstrate that it's mine. And the Talmud Yerushalmi from that pasuk in Masechet Kiddushin derives that the very walking in a field, halok v'chazor, back and forth, is an act of demonstration of ownership. You don't have to have a contract, you don't have to have this, you don't have that. If people see that you're walking halok v'chazor in your field, everybody knows it's your field. Something, the Talmud Bavli, the more you have to put up a fence, you have to do something a little bit more concrete to demonstrate ownership. But according to the Yerushalmi, you don't have to do anything except walk back and forth. So if you're going to Tiyul, you fulfill kumet alech ba'aretz lo kal amoch ba'. I once asked Rav Shechter, the great Rosh Kol Mayu, and I drove him once, he gave a shiur here, and then he had to get to Beit Meir, and Kadosh Baruch Hu should send his rachmanut to all those who suffered in the fire, including the Moshav Beit Meir, there's a yeshiva there. And I drove there, and I asked him a simple question, where the Gemara says, kol ha'olech dal ramot ba'aretz Yisrael, do you fulfill that if you're in a car? You know, on wheels. Or do you have to walk? You know, so, you know, There's a logic to every madness. So what was my question? My question is that in the mitzvah of Aliyah L'Regel, you have to walk. Going up to Har HaBayit, you have to walk. You can take a car from Afula to Yerushalayim, that you can do. But if you're going to be Mekayim to fulfill the mitzvah of Aliyah L'Regel, you have to enter into Har HaBayit by foot. And that's why if a person has difficulty walking, the person is exempt from the mitzvah of Aliyah L'Regel. That's a shear in itself. Why? But it's a din of, we don't call it aliyah leregel for nothing. It's aliyah leregel because it's beregel. Like if I took a helicopter and, you know, lowered myself you know, onto Har HaBayit on Chol HaMoed Sukkos, I would not have fulfilled the mitzvah of Aliyah L'Regel. There may have been an Aliyah, but it wasn't B'Regel. Right? So that's on that basis, I asked Rav Shechter what he thinks about Kol HaOlech Dal HaNamot. So he thought this was a more loose expression of Chazal, and not to be taken literally as Holech Dal HaRamot, but when a person travels, he's also Holech. He's going. Bidyuk means he's going. You're absolutely right. That's what he thought. I was very happy because I wanted him to have the mitzvah, you know, as I was driving him. So we're going to see now in the mitzvah of tefillah that the Ramban actually does not include the mitzvah of tefillah as part of the 613. Where in Yishuv Ha'aretz, it's just the opposite. The Ramban includes it, and the Rambam does not include it. Here in tefillah, the Rambam includes it, the Ramban doesn't include it. Now, these are part of the overall cheshbon, because the Ramban would like to end the day at 613 as well. So there's got to be some balance. And the question is, if details of a particular mitzvah count as individual mitzvot, yes or no? So if there's four modes of execution in the Torah, skilah, sreifa, herig, nechenek, does that take up four spaces in Taryag or one space? So according to the Rambam, it takes up four spaces. According to the Ramban, it only takes up one space. So he already saved three spaces for other things that he would like to include because the Rambam deleted and so on. And vice versa. This is how it works. This is how the intellectual gymnastics is working here orchestrating it, engineering the 613, that it comes out right at the end of the day, 613. And the question is how we arrive at that. For example, there are certain piskei halacha that you know what you're going to say. I saw this with the Rav, by the way, but you really have to be good and have good halachic intuition with this. You know what you're going to say. You know what the answer is. But you just have to go back to the books and find out how you get there. In other words, you work backwards. I'll give you a good example. Good example. Never did I think that the Jerusalem Post, page one, is going to be a source for a shiur that I give Tuesday night in Ol Nechama about modern halachic piskei halacha decisions. Which is nice. This year I decided to do that, take some very modern questions and kick it around. But I never thought Jerusalem Post, page one, is going to give me a topic. Right? So the Rav Rashi of Zichron Yaakov, and he also is the one who registers marriages in Haifa, and those cities got hit hard in the fire. He said, if your ketubah was burnt up with your house, you can't live together with your spouse until you get yourself a new ketubah. You have to separate until you get a new ketubah. So the chief rabbis, Rav Yitzchak Yosef and Rav David Lau, immediately contradicted this and said, that's not the case. This is a type of psak halacha where if somebody would ask me, I know the answer, and then I'm just going to have to justify it. That's all. I'm not going to tell a person who just sustained a loss of everything, and I'm going to tell them, by the way, you can't live with your husband or your wife. Now, of course, you know, some of the wives may have been pretty happy with that psak, but those who weren't, what do you do? What are the issue? The issue is the Chazal made an institution that there has to be a ketubah. If there's not a ketubah, so then it's a concubine. Then it's a pilegish status. You don't want that. So Rav Lau said, Rav David Lau said, look, when you do a wedding here in Israel, so there's always a copy of the ketubah, word for word. May not have all the artwork around it, but the text is identical. And the same witnesses are signing. The witnesses sign twice before the wedding, you know, before the chuppah and so on. And that goes to the file. Why is that done? Just in case the ketubah gets lost. It has happened. People have lost the ketubah. They moved, and then they never knew where they put it. You know, it can happen. Oh, a fire burnt and so on, got lost. I mean, you think in days of the Shoah, people didn't lose ketubot? Of course they lost ketubot. They lost everything else. Why shouldn't they lose their ketubot? So in those cases, you really do have to quickly enough get a new ketubah. But here in Israel, because there is an available copy, so they don't give you the copy, but against that copy, the Rabbanut writes you a new ketubah. That's how it works. It has a name to it also. It's called Ketubah de Irchasa. But that's what they do. They give you another ketubah against the copy that's there, but you're covered anyway. So then the Rabbanim Rashim said that according to Rav Avad Yosef, the Svardim were covered anyway, and it was only a question about the Ashkenazim. I don't know if that made the situation better or worse, that whole discussion. But then there was a particular Pesach Kerem Shalayim who said that they should also do a Kiddushin again. They should get two witnesses. And that was outrageous. I mean, in Kol HaKavod, I'm not even going to mention the name because I was covered. I think it was totally outrageous. to say that the burnt ketubah is now caused a rupture in the Maisa Kedushin that they did under the chuppah, and they have to do it again, you know. And then what happens is that if some poysik says that everybody else l'chumra is looking over the right shoulder, oh, let's do this, and have all kind of, and who's going to make the money on this? The catering halls, right? They're going to want to make a big spread and at least a kiddush and something. Somebody's going to make money off this. It's wrong. So the answer. So the only question was those who got married in Chutz Laretz and this idea of a copy. When I did weddings in Chutz Laretz, I didn't do that many, but when I did, I always made a copy anyway, and I sent it to the office of the RCA, the Rabbinical Council of America. So there should be a copy, even though it wasn't mandatory. But the RCA members do it as a regular basis for the same reason that we do it here. For the same reason. But not every Rav in America or in England is a member of. I don't know the procedure in England, but I assume that the United Synagogue has something of this nature too. They do, okay, right? They have to. And because they have to protect against the loss or destruction of a ketubah. And it's really the only way that we can do that. And if indeed there is no record, then the couple goes to the Rabbanut and makes a new one. That's all. They'll give them, they'll let them jump the line, all right? They won't make anybody sleep outside. That's for sure not. So I'm just saying is that's an example of you hear a shaila, and you know what the answer is. You just have to figure out how we're going to arrive at the solution. And here, you know it's 6:13 according to Rambam and Ramban. You know it's 6:13, and now we just have to plug in the pieces that we're going to make sure that we end up with 6:13. So the Rambam counts regular tefillah by the Rambam means once a day. One a day, multiple vitamin. Remember those? So one a day, once a day. Rambam knows that three times a day is a rabbinic add-on. That's Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, 2,500 years ago. Fine. But once a day, one day could be 10 in the morning, one day could be 10 in the evening, whatever it is, within a 24-hour time framework, turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and request something, but do it in a certain formula, not in a nusach. There is no nusach in the Torah of davening. You're on your own in terms of the verbal formulation. But open up with a word of praise to God. Get to the point. End with some thanksgiving gesture. That's called tefillah. Shevach bakasha hoda'ah. The Rambam says that when Anshei Knesset HaGdolah put the Shmoneh Esrei together, they followed that formula. So the first three brachot are praise, shevach. This core section of Shmoneh Esrei is the bakasha, request, and the three brachot at the end are hodaya, moedim, and so on. So that's really what the Chachamim did with the official Shmoneh Esrei. But the Rambam believes that Avodat Hashem is not just a wide sweeping concept like be holy, Kedosh Shem to you, but it's defined as tefillah, as a specific act. It has a definition. He doesn't make it up. He has sources. Like one of the things I said a few weeks ago is that the Rambam will, unless otherwise indicated, turn to Midrash Halakha. Not to a Mishnah, not to a Gemara, but Midrash Halakha. The world of Midrash is divided into two camps. One is the Midrash Halakha, and one is the Midrash Agada. We most probably are more familiar with the Midrash Agada because we learn Rashi. Rashi is 90% paraphrasing or quoting Midrash Agada, Breshit Midrash Rabba, Psikta Rav Kahana, Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer. These are known Midrashim. Sometimes there are those that are less known, but that's all Midrash Agada, which amplify the biblical text or somehow some add-ons here and deletions, ideas, thoughts pinned onto the Pasuk. Fine, these are wonderful, wonderful ideas of ethics and morality that emanate from the Pasuk. This is called Midrash Agada. Midrash Halakha is to take the Pasuk and squeeze out the din, squeeze out the Halakha. Lo tevashel gedi b'chalei v'imo. How in the world do you know that means what we know today as basar b'chalav? How do you know that? How do you know that the meat has to be kosher? Ah, because it says gedi. And gedi is a kosher animal. So it reflects, it's just an example of a kosher animal. And therefore, if it's a non-kosher animal, it's not this. It's just non-kosher. But it's not this pasuk. It's lo tevashel gedi b'chalev imo. You don't find that in Midrash Rabbah. You find that in the Mechilta. Mechilta is the Medrash Halakha on Sefer Shmot. And there's a Safra on Sefer Vayikra. And Sifrei or Sifri on Bamidbar and Dvarim. So we have the Sfarim of Midrash Halakha, which by the way also comes in two camps, Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel. Two fundamental camps of Midrash Halakha. And they have different rules of how to squeeze out the dinim from the pasuk. Rabbi Shmuel is mostly more popular because it's printed in every siddur before Sugei Zimra. Rabbi Shmuel Omer, Shlosh Shrei Midot Shatoran Dreshet, Kal V'chom, Gzeir HaShavah, and so on. And then, you know, say Kaddish Rabbanan afterwards. Fine. But it's the least used in halakha. It's more popular simply because it made it to the siddur, and there's a history to that too. But Rabbi Akiva's listing is not 13 midot, tools, let's use the word tools, but his listing is 32 tools. 32 tools. It's printed in the end of every Shas Bavli Vilna of Masechet Brachot under the name Shloshim Ashtayim Midot Shel Rabbi Yosef Aglili. Beseda, but he was a Talmud of Rabbi Akiva. We know it's Rabbi Akiva's. But what's the dominant mida? It's called Ribuyim and Miutim. Things that seem to be extra, seems to be deleted. In the Rabbi Shmuel list, it's klal uprat, a generalization and a detail. And there's a difference between a klal and a prat and ribuy and miyut. Ribuy and miyut, we have every page in the Gemara. Zeba l'rabot, zeba l'ma'et, l'hotzi. We use it all the time. We don't even realize that our halachic mind functions on the frequency of Rabbi Akiva. That's what it's doing. Because Rabbi Akiva became the dominant Tana, and he's the forerunner of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi in the Mishnah. So the Mishnayot function in accordance with the spirit of Rabbi Akiva's Midrash Halacha. But the Rambam is aware of both, and sometimes he will call upon and draw upon the Midrash Halacha of this one or that one. So today we have both. We have Mechilta, we have an alternate Mechilta called Mechilta de Rashbi, Shem Baichoy, and he was a student of Rabbi Akiva. The standard Mechilta happens to be sort of Rabbi Shmuel, and so on. That's a parasha in itself to understand the nature of the Midrash Halacha. But the Rambam is going to cite Midrash Halacha all the time. So let's see it here in source number 5. Mitzvah Hamishit, and the fifth mitzvah of the positive, Shetzivanu Le'ovdo Yitaleh, to serve him, his greatness. I think Yitaleh might be translated Your Highness. Your Highness, right? No, seriously. Ukvar nichpal tzivuy ze pa'amim. It's been, this idea of service of God shows up in the Chumash over and over. Amar, it says in Parshat Mishpatim, v'avaretem et Hashem Elokechem. Ve'amar, it says in Parshat Re'eh, v'oto tavod. Ve'amar, and it says in Parshat Vetchanan, v'oto tavod. Ve'amar, it says in Parshat Ekev, u'lovdo. Right, u'lovdo b'chol levavchem. Even though this command, serve God, seems to be one of the general mitzvot, lacking a specific definition, in the 14 shorashim, in paragraph number 4, in the fourth shorash, in the fourth paragraph of rules, he states that if something is of a general nature, it does not belong in the list of 613. So now he has to explain why he puts this into the list of 613. Why it's an exception. Hine yesh ba yichud, it has something specific, and I'll use the word not just yichud specific, but defined. Ve'shehu mitzvah tziva b'tfilah. This is the command to pray, to daven. Ve'lashon sifri, here's the sifri, this is the Medrash Halacha of Sefer Dvarim. Ulavdo, it says lavdo b'chol levavchem, zu tfila. The Medrash puts his finger on it and says this means tfila. Ve'amru gam kein ulavdo ze Talmud. There's another Medrash there that follows right immediately afterwards, and he says ulavdo also means study Talmud Torah. So one second, what is it? Is it Talmud Torah or is it tfila? And is it from this same pasuk that the Rambam derives the mitzvah of Talmud Torah? No. Talmud Torah is derived from many other psukim. Limadetem otam et b'nechem, v'shinamtem v'necha. There's a whole slew of psukim that teach us the mitzvah of Torah study. So what does it mean? Ulavdo b'chol levavchem, zu tfila. Ulavdo b'chol levavchem, zu Talmud. Our great Rebbe, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, Zichron Lebracha, gave a speech, and it was written up. Ulavdo zu Talmud. It was presented to some forum of teachers and principals here in Israel, where he basically was bemoaning the fact that even the schools that teach Gemara well, and even if the students are enthused, this is a big even if, because we know that a lot of kids are not terribly enthused and stimulated by Gemara study, but even if they are, he said what's lacking is a feeling of Avodat Hashem. There's something about davening where even though there's a text and so on, but people realize it's a dialogue with a Kadosh Baruch Hu. This is really Avodat Hashem at its best. But when you open up a Gemara and you start reading a Mishnah and a Gemara, you don't sense the same thing. You don't sense that Shiviti Hashem L'Negdi Tamid, like Kadosh Baruch Hu is in front of me. If a person is serious about his or her davening, I'm not talking about somebody who davenes like a robot, you know, just because it's 7 in the morning, so you have to daven, you open up the siddur, you burn, it's 7:20 and you're through. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about a person who's serious about davening, understands that Da'alef Nehmiyat Omed, you know that Kadosh Baruch Hu is there, so there's a sensation of Avodat Hashem. But with learning Talmud Torah, there's a certain lack of feeling Avodat Hashem, and Rav Lichtenstein himself personally, you know, dealt with this his whole life to that he should sense the Kadosh Baruch Hu's there when he's delving into a very dry technical sugya of the Gemara, that it's also Avodat Hashem, and he cites this medrash, "Ul avdos hu Talmud." But what the medrash is basically saying is that in the study in Talmud Torah there has to be a feeling of Avodat Hashem, but tefillah goes beyond that, and therefore he brings another medrash. Ubimishnato shel Rabbi Elazar ben Osher Rabbi Yosef Glili, it says Amru minayin leikar tefillah b'toch haMitzvot. How do you know that the idea of davening is part of the mitzvah list? Mehacha, from here. Et Hashem Elokecha tira ve'oto tavod, and you should serve him. This is the source. Ve'amru, and it has been explained, avdehu b'torato, avdehu b'migdasho. You should serve God with His Torah. This is a restatement of what was just said before, that Avodat Hashem is Torah, and you should serve Him in His Mikdash. Now what does that have to do with tefillah? When we think Beit HaMikdash, what's the first thing that comes to mind? Sacrificial activity, korbanot. And the Rambam says, no. Klomar, lalechet sham litpalel bo, vinegdo, kemo shebi'er shlomo, alav shalom, im malachim aleph perek chet. When Beit HaMikdash opens up, Beit Rishon, first Beit HaMikdash, and Shlomo HaMelech offers this long-winded tefillah, which is where the central line of the Slichot of Ashkenaz, the first Motzei Shabbat, Lishmoa El Arina Vela Tefillah, comes from. So there, Shlomo HaMelech has paragraph after paragraph of what you might need a Kadosh Baruch Hu for. And all different types of personal tzara and anguish, national issues. You turn to Kadosh Baruch Hu, and he invites the nations of the world as well to see this as an address. There used to be a thing in America called the International House of Pancakes, but this is the International House of Prayer. That's what, and Yeshayahu said it so beautifully later on. Ki beiti beit tefila yikarei l'chol ha'amim. It's the International House of Prayer. So, according to the Rambam, the principle, what Shlomo Melech was talking about at the opening ceremony of Beit HaMikdash was not korbanot. It was about tefillah. So a tefillah, he says, comes in two. Tefillah in its relationship to Beit Mikdash, he says two things. Klomar, lalechet sham litpalel bo, vinegdo. What does it mean, vinegdo? What does the word vinegdo mean? Opposite it. Which means, if you can't be there, face it. That's what it means. That's what he's saying. If you can't be there, face it. In essence, what the Rambam is saying is that there are two ways to fulfill Avodat Hashem in Beit HaMikdash. The best way, which is the preferred option, and that is to be in the Beit HaMikdash proximity. That's where you daven. If you cannot, so the second best. Second best is wherever you are, at least face the Mikdash. And it's interesting that when the Rambam gives his halachot in Mishneh Torah about davening, so he uses the phrase Nochach HaMikdash. Nochach HaMikdash. Then when he delineates, he says, he brings the Breita from Masechet Brachot Daf Lamed. If you're in Chutz La'aretz, you face Eretz Yisrael. If you're in Eretz Yisrael, you face Yerushalayim. If you're in Yerushalayim, you face the Mikdash. And if you're in the Mikdash, you face the Kodesh Kodeshim. And if you're in the Kodesh Kodeshim, you face the Kruvim. Everybody's facing somebody. There's always what to look up to. But in his general statement, where he says there are eight matters that a person has to be careful about when he davens, so one of them is Nochach HaMikdash. Those two words. Which means he doesn't say Nochach Yerushalayim. And when we talk about davening, we always talk about davening where's, well, in Chutz La'aretz, they got used to saying Mizrach, to the extent that, because Europe was west of Eretz Yisrael, and they would have Mizrach. Of course, today, I don't ask any questions. I simply, take out my Kotel compass. Right? You have a Kotel compass, and you know exactly which direction is you're supposed to stand. And this, bless this phone, it works in Warsaw and Krakow and New York and Los Angeles. Once the phone has its location set, so it adjusts itself accordingly, and you get the direction. And what's interesting is that I like the... Yeah, Baksha.
Is it really towards the Kotel? It's towards the Kodesh Kodeshim, which is a little bit...
Yeah, okay, but it's Be'erach, right. But that's a machloket, by the way, exactly where was precisely the Kodesh Kodeshim. There's Rav Goren's view, and there are a few other views, so it's slightly off. But listen, if you're getting it in the area of the Kotel, that's pretty close. It's certainly close, no question.
What does the Ramban say on the Sifri?
Okay. Right, so he says that there is tefillah in a crisis moment. Crisis moment. That the Torah never told us you have to daven once a day. Where does the Ramban come up with that? Of course the Ramban knows this tefillah. Tefillah is part of Tanakh. You see tefillah all the time. It's not an innovation of Chachamim. But he says the tefillah that you see in Tanakh is always crisis mode. Somebody's in trouble, so they turn to Kadosh Baruch Hu. It could be a long tefillah, it could be just a half a sentence, Kel na refana lav Moshe Rabbeinu. Whatever the tefillah is, Ramban says crisis tefillah is min haTorah. So if it's crisis tefillah, it's subjective. So one person might be davening five times a day because somebody dear to him or to her is now undergoing surgery, and you keep on davening, keep on davening, keep on davening. So that's one thing. Another person, Baruch Hashem, everything's okay, so maybe he davens once a month. If it's crisis tefillah, right? Okay, that's a different thing. But with regard to tefillah, so the Rambam with a mem also knows that there's crisis tefillah. He doesn't ignore this, except he puts it in a different paragraph category. He says it's hilchot taniyot. He calls it za'aka, gives it a different name even. But it's crisis tefillah. Rob wrote about this a lot. So crisis tefillah is according to Ramban tefillah, and according to Rambam it's za'aka. And tefillah, according to the Rambam, is mandatory, statutory tefillah, once a day. Whether you're something's on your mind or not, something better be on your mind. You can't go through life without not needing a Kadosh Baruch Hu. So you have this big machloket between Rambam and Ramban. And according to the Ramban, you could go through days and weeks and months without fulfilling the mitzvah of tefillah because there's no crisis at hand. Thank God. So the Rav Zichron Levracha, in one of his most famous sayings, Mamash, one of the most famous sayings, wanted to make Sholem Bayit between the Rambam and the Ramban. So how did he do that? He said, in the bracha that we say at Ma'ariv every night, Hashkivenu, so that bracha is basically a bracha that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should protect us. As the bracha comes to an end, Shomer Amo Yisrael La'ad. So we ask, Shmor Tzeteinu Uvoenu L'chaim U'Shalom Me'ata V'Olam, our goings and our comings, wherever we are, Kadosh Baruch Hu should be on top of it, because there are dangers that lurk. Vaser Satan milfaneinu u'me'achoreinu. So the Rav said, what is this? Who's the Satan? What does that mean? The Rav said it's potential danger. So sometimes there's dangers that are milfaneinu. You see it. There's news that there's a wave of an epidemic. So, it could be a flu epidemic, but there's a vaccine. So don't be an idiot, go take the vaccine, Don't come to me crying that you got the flu if you were negligent and didn't do the vaccine. So there are things that we can do to forestall. There's a military issue. The army can take certain steps to forestall a danger. Some other calamity that's lurking. So you can take certain preventive measures. It may not eliminate the danger, but it might minimize the danger. It might prepare the nation for the danger so they'll be able to weather the storm better. These are the Satan Mufaneinu. But what about the Satan Macharenu? You don't have a clue that you're in danger. And there are many, many examples like that in life. You woke up as a healthy person, and the next thing you know, after a simple doctor's visit, that you're in mortal danger. You didn't know that yesterday. You were ill-prepared for that, and how to deal with that. You're driving perfectly. Your car's okay. You're a great driver. You never got a ticket in your life. Except the person coming at the intersection who didn't take note that there was a red light, and went right into you, and now you're maimed for life, or even worse. That's a Satan me'achareinu. You couldn't do anything about it. You did everything humanly possible to be okay, and somehow the danger hit you from the outside. A pigua shaloni damitzahot. A fire. I mean, this is Satan me'achareinu. What are you going to do? So we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Vaser Satan milfaneinu me'achareinu. So Rav said, even the Ramban would have to agree that every person is in a crisis mode. Sometimes you are aware of the crisis, sometimes you're not aware of the crisis. But you should be acknowledged that you're always in crisis mode. And therefore, even the Ramban would have to agree that there's a need to daven at least once a day. So just a beautiful thought. The Rav says, if you say it again, you say it in his name, not me. I'm just the Omer of Yehuda Marav, you know, like, just in his name. But it's a tremendous idea that a person has to daven. I say a person, not just a Jew. Shlomo Melech taught us that a goy has to daven also. A goy has to believe in God. And by the way, you know, we grew up with the notion of seven mitzvot of Noach. Yeah, seven mitzvot. Rambam even spells it out for us in Perek Tet of Hilchot Melachim. If you open up the Encyclopedia Talmudit, I think it's volume Gimel or Dalit, that has the article on Ben Noach, so there's an appendix at the end. And it shows that there are different opinions as to what the final number of how many mitzvot goyim are obligated. Because just as Rav Saadia Gaon said that the Ten Commandments, Aseret HaDibrot, are headlines of 613, that you can plug in all the other mitzvot under the categories of 10, so the seven mitzvot b'nei Noach are category headlines of many mitzvot. Not 613, but the maximum shita view brings it up to 30 mitzvot. That goyim are obligated in 30 mitzvot. So it's not a small amount, by the way, of mitzvot to be involved in. And one of them is tefillah. Because clearly one of the categories of seven mitzvot b'nei Noach is negation of avodah zarah. That's clear. It's against avodah zarah for the idolatry. And the Rambam says that if you deny our Kadosh Baruch Hu, you're ipso facto agreeing that a Kadosh Baruch Hu is there. Because, you know, because the Rambam never believed in atheism. I once pointed this out to a very, very fine, I don't call him my friend, but an acquaintance, a very good acquaintance, a close acquaintance from Beersheba, Rav Professor Jerry Yaakov Blitzstein. Remember Jerry? Shows you. So Jerry Blitzstein is a very fine Talmud Chacham and a scholar. He won Pras Yisrael one year for his works, monumental works on research of Rambam studies and so on. He was the head of the Jewish thought department at Ben Gurion University. So he gave a speech once in Bar Ilan University on the relationship of the Meiri, Rabbi Menachem HaMeiri, end of the era of the Rishonim, the end of the 13th century in Provence, South France, about his relationship to Goyim, which is important, how the Rishonim treated Goyim from various points of view. And it because Meiri was so connected intellectually with the Rambam, it became a little bit of a Rambam discussion also. And the question of atheism came up, and something was a little bit unclear in his own presentation. He said something wasn't clear. And I suggested to him afterwards that when the Rambam draws our attention to a braita in Maseret Horiot, Kol HaKofer Bavodah Zara Modeh BaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ba'ikar. Ba'ikar means the main, which means HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And Kol HaModeh Ba'ikar Kofer BaAvodah Zara, that if you agree that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is there, then you automatically deny idolatry. And if you agree with idolatry, you automatically deny HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What it means is no room for any in between. It's either yes or no. So which means the Rambam is against atheism. What do you mean against atheism? There is no such thing as an atheist, which means a person doesn't believe in a Kadosh Baruch Hu, he believes in idolatry. It doesn't mean pulchan. Pulchan means ritual idolatry. It doesn't mean he has a pesel, he has got a getchka, a statue, or something like that. The Rav Oish taught us that lo tasa lecha pesel v'chol tmuna is just a detail or an example of avodah zarah. But the fundamental idea of a idolatrous worship is lo yiyan lecha Elohim acherim al panai. Anything that's supreme in this world, that's not a Kadosh Baruch Hu, by definition is avodah zarah. So it could be an ideological idea. I swear by communism, I swear by democracy. And the Rav said, I swear by Zionism. If it's not a Kadosh Baruch Hu on top, then Zionism is avodah zarah. That's what he said. And if you don't believe that a Kadosh Baruch Hu is on top, then democracy is avodah zarah. And believe me, in this country, there's some people who are oyver avodah zarah on this point. Because they made democracy into the most important value. And I remind people that Hitler was elected democratically in 1933. So that's what you can say about that. I'm a Democrat, don't get me wrong. Because I believe, I think what John Kennedy, Oliver Shalom said, it was just his yard sign, you know. So he said that when he was in Berlin, he said that the democracy may not be the best system of the world. We don't have to put up a wall to keep our people in. He said this at the Berlin Wall in 1961 when he said, Ich bin ein Berliner, you know, I'm one of you. It was a very, very, very important statement. It's true, we have our problems with democracy. Ask Hillary, she'll tell you all about it. But the other systems are probably worse in terms of human dignity and so on. But we work with it. That's all, we work with it. But a Kadosh Baruch Hu's got to be on top of the list. If it's not top of the list, if it's sharing the podium with somebody, it's called Avodah Zarah B'Shituf. There's a category like that. Avodah Zarah B'Shituf. It's partnership. We call it Christianity, by the way. The Rambam said that Christianity was Avodah Zarah B'Shituf because they made a human being into a deity. They believe in God, but they believe that God reflected himself as a human body 2,000 years ago. No. Rambam says this is Avodah Zarah. Mamish, he says it's Avodah Zarah B'Shituf. So when we talk about the tefillah, just lost my train.
Atheism, you're talking about.
What was that?
You're talking about atheism.
Right, I mentioned that the Rambam didn't believe in atheism. That it didn't believe in atheism. Either you're in or you're out. Let's just get back to tefillah. Right, okay, I was talking about Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach. Thank you. We're just peeling back a little bit. So Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach, everybody agrees that there's a Issur Avodah Zarah. So many posts can point out there's a mitzvah, a positive mitzvah, that the guy's supposed to believe in God. It's not just not believing in Avodah Zarah, but Anochi Hashem Elokecha is also part of the seven mitzvot. That's how you get to 30. And within that category is tefillah. Because tefillah is Avodat Hashem. And there's some that say that goyim have to daven. They have to daven. They don't have to open up a siddur. Is it Ashkenaz or Sfarad? You know, like they just have to turn to God as Shlomo Melech invited them to daven. I remember when the Ethiopians came on Aliyah, the Ethiopian Jewish community. So there was a big fight between Rav Gordon and Rav Avad Yosef. Who was going to have the jurisdiction over them? And Rav Avad Yosef said, look, I don't know what they are, but they're certainly not Ashkenazim. Yep. So I want to point out with this idea of Deo b'mikdasho, klomar lelechet sham litpalel bo v'negdo, that it means that the Beit HaMikdash's principal function is service of God that expresses itself in A, tefillah, bet, korbanot, and there's also a third expression of Avodat Hashem in the presence of Beit HaMikdash, and that's bowing, hishtachaviyah, which means if we were allowed to bow today, we're not allowed to, the police will throw you right off, but if you go up to Har Bayit and you bow, that would be in fulfillment of, why do I say this? To go into the Mikdash area, you're only allowed to go in if you have something to do that's defined as Avodat Hashem. If you have nothing to do that's defined as Avodat Hashem, you don't belong there. You don't go up to Har Bayit because you're making a political statement. You don't go up to Har Bayit because you want to take pictures for your album, you know, against the background of this or that. That's not why you walk up to Har Bayit. If you're going to go on Har Bayit already, it has to be within the framework of Avodat Hashem. So according to Rav Goren Zatzal, the mere going on to Har Bayit is the continuation of the liberation of Har Bayit from 67. Because he claimed that if we didn't continue to go up to Har Bayit, we relinquish claim to Har Bayit. And therefore, it's part of kibush. So that's not part of the halachot of Har Bayit. That's part of the halachot of maintaining Eretz Yisrael in our hands. And certainly, Yerushalayim and Makom Mikdash is an integral part of Eretz Yisrael that we would like to maintain in our hands. So if this is what requires to maintain a presence, an ongoing presence on a regular basis, so there's a political, religious political consideration there. But other than that, which Rav Goren articulated so well in his book, is the idea of Avodat Hashem. So bowing you can't do today, korbanot you don't have today, so what's left? They don't even let you daven when you go up to Har Bayit. So, oh, yefeh. So how do you daven without davening? So the Mishnah, yeah, this Yiddish cup comes up with an idea. There's a Mishnah in Masechet Brachot, the third parak. It says, Ezra HaSofer, beginning by Cheney, tried to legislate something that just didn't go over. There's a concept called Gzeirah Shatzibur Lo Yechola Lamod Bo. If there's a restriction that it doesn't pass the test of reality, it's just too difficult for people to maintain it, so it just gets dropped. It has to be realistic and reasonable that people can do it. If they can't do it, it's not going to work. Ezra HaSofer had this grand idea that before a person utters Davar Shabikdusha, Tfila, Kriyat Shema, Bracha, he's got to go to the mikveh because he might be tamei before. So therefore, he should go to mikveh every morning. Basically, it has to do with marital relations, that the man also becomes tamei on some level, and therefore he should go to the mikveh on a regular basis. And then the Mishnah says, this got dropped. It got dropped because people just couldn't do this. There are some people who go to mikveh every morning, as you know, but it's a minute amount. But the Gemara questions such a person who didn't go to the mikveh. So the Mishnah asks, so how is he going to say Kriyat Shema? How is he going to daven? So it says, Maharher Belibo. Maharher Belibo means he just thinks it. Thinks the text. He doesn't say it. Because if in accordance with that gzeirah, you're now to say a davar shebekdusha without going to the mikveh, so, but you still have to fulfill the mitzvah of Kriyat Shema, and you still have to fulfill the mitzvah of brachot and tefillah, so you have to think of it. Now this has been extended to include people who've had strokes and lost their power of speech. Right? The Babish Rebbe could not speak for 2 years at the end of his life because of a debilitating stroke. So what happened? Person loses power of speech. How do you daven? You want to daven. You feel you want to daven. So you think the tefillah. It's not just zemash yesh. That's the tefillah. That's what the way a person's going to daven without articulating the words. So if a person does know how to, can Baruch Hashem speak, then you have to speak. You can't just say, I'm going to think the tefillah. No, you have to speak. You have to say it out. You have to say it out to the extent that you yourself hear it. You can't just move your lips, by the way, when you say Kriyat Shema. You can't do... You have to hear... You yourself have to hear it. It doesn't mean you have to make yourself a public nuisance and everybody else has to hear it. But you have to hear, at least you have to hear the Kriyat Shema that you're saying. Shmon Esrei also. When it says Shmon Esrei B'Lachash, doesn't mean you don't hear it. You have to hear it, just to make sure that the next person next to you doesn't hear it. So you have to gauge yourself. You know, some people are a little bit too generous with raising their voice, and then it's an interruption for others. So it's a, you got to strike a balance here in terms of what the exact volume is and the minimum and so on. But you do have to hear it. But if you can't, you fulfill your obligation if you're Maharher Belibo. So this is what I tell people. Go up to Har Abaya today without getting into the other halakhic dilemmas that are there, and there are halakhic issues going to Har Abaya. But if you're going to Har Abaya anyway, you have to be there in a mode of tefillah. That means about an hour and a half of thinking tefillah. Because if you're not thinking tefillah, you don't belong there. You're not allowed to go up. You have to go up in for avodat Hashem. You have to go up with all kinds of tefillot in your head. They don't have to be a formal parak of tefillim. They could be private tefillot. And you know, Kadosh Baruch Hu figured out the other languages also. Tefillah can be said in any language.
Well, that's not like Doran's Kippur Shahar is explanation. You're doing it for,
right, according to, right. I said that. According to Rav Gorin, there's an idea of continuing the kibush, which is an idea that has nothing to do with what I just said now about Avodat Hashem. It's simply in line of kibush haaretz, and here it's kibush Yerushalayim, and because there's a political question about sovereignty, so we want to demonstrate that it's ours, and so on. And that's for sure, according to Rav Gorin, has basis. Even if all you're doing is snapping photos when you're up there. But if you want to be serious about going up to Har Abayit, so here it says, Lelechet Sham Litpalel Bo. That's what Avodat Hashem, that's what the Mikdash really is. If you can't be there, then second best is wherever you are, shul or home, or on the street, face Yerushalayim. And just as a last thought, Rav Yaakov Meidan, the great Rosh Yeshiva in the Gush, so he gave a series of shirim in memory of a boy from Gush who fell many years ago. His name was Daniel. And the boys in the shir went to the parents' home every month on Motzah Shabbos, had a get-together, where he, Rav Meidan, would give a shir on Sefer Daniel. Sefer Daniel has exactly 12 prakim. Mm-hmm. Exactly 12 prakim. So each Motzah Shabbos, monthly shir, it was another parak. And then the yeshiva published it as a book. So Daniel, the whole incident where the sarim tried to, the ministers tried to bury him, by the minister suggested to the king that, you know, you're so great and we'll have a period of time where all prayer will be directed to you. The king loved it was very flattering and so on, knowing that they're going to catch Daniel in the act davening and have him arrested, And of course, the idea was that anybody that defies the king is going to be thrown into the lion's den, and so on, which is what happened. And the king couldn't reverse the order, because just like in Megillat Esther, if the law was passed, there's no taking back. And Kadosh Baruch Hu pulls off a very important miracle and saves Daniel. And the other three the three ministers are thrown into the lion's den for lunch. And it wasn't that they ate the lion for lunch; it was the other way around. So there, in the description of Daniel's tefillah, it says that he was at the window. We learn all kinds of halachot here, that there is an idea that shuls have to have windows, and he was facing Yerushalayim. So the question is, why was he facing Yerushalayim? Why? Because here's the source of facing Yerushalayim. So Rav Beitan explains, the Gemara says in Masechet Sukkah, that if a person is looking for wisdom, he should face south. So it says go south. It says how what says Yachkim Yadrim. Yadrim means go south. Like they used to say in America, you know, go west, you know. And if you're looking for wealth, go north. Harotzesh Yashir Yatzpin. Why? Because the Chochmah was in Yavne and Yerushalayim. That was the south of the country. And the economic stratas of the upper stratas were in the Galil. All right, you're looking for wealth, you know, go north. You'll be in the business district, if you may. Fine. And the proof is, the siman, that the shulchan and the mishkan was in the north and the menorah was in the south. That's an interesting idea. That's what Gemara says. Rashi says, doesn't mean move north and move south, which seems to be the pshat, which means be in the close proximity of the chachamim or be in close proximity of good business people, it'll rub off on you. Rashi says, it means that if these are things that you want that a Kadosh Baruch Hu should help you with, so face south when you daven. So Kadosh Baruch Hu gets the point that that's what you really want. And if you want wealth, face north. Like Kadosh Baruch Hu gets the point that that's what you want. What Daniel was teaching us is no matter what's on your mind, whatever your needs may be, your principal need is that Yerushalayim should be rebuilt. And that's why we face Yerushalayim. And now I went over to Rav Meidan and I said, now I begin to understand the Pasuk in my own Bar Mitzvah Parsha this week. Right, happy birthday, right? It's 51 years already since the Bar Mitzvah, but I still remember the Pasuk, right? It says, Vayetar Yitzchak lenochach ishto ki akarahi. And Yitzchak davens opposite his wife, for she was barren. Rashi says that both, what does it mean, nochach ishto? It's like a boxing match. Yitzchak's in one corner, and Rivka's in the other corner, and they're both davening. And I grew up on that. But that's not the pshat. What it means is that Yitzchak davens opposite his wife, ki akarahi. This is the object of the prayer. He's davening on behalf of his wife Yitzchak, who is barren. By Ye'etar, which is a lashon of tefillah, atira with an ayin taf resh. He's davening to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ye'etar Yitzchak, where? Lenochach ishto, ki akarahi. Why is he facing Rivka? He's facing Rivka. She's the object of the tefillah. And why she's the object of the tefillah? What's on his mind? Ki akarahi. She's barren. That's the pshat. That's the pshat. And this is what the Rambam says, v'negdo. If you can't be in the Beit Mikdash, you better face the Beit Mikdash. Because this is what Daniel taught us. This is what Rav Meidan taught me, and what Daniel taught us. And this is why we face Yerushalayim. Because even though you have other things on your tefillah agenda, the most important aspect of our tefillah is the restoration of Yerushalayim. And that's why we face it. That's why we face it. All right. Lamad v'masha. No.